Personal History of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens.
In language whose excess imparts the power they feel so well, there may perhaps in such a scene some recollection be.
Part 6, The Beginning of a Long Journey.
Of days that heaven's happy been, and you'll remember me.
I left Highgate at dawn and reached Yarmouth in the evening.
Emily, little love, see, here's Master Davy. Why? Not a word to him?
Oh, Davy.
Oh, that's such a loving heart, it can't abear the sorrow of this. It's getting late, my dear, and I'm going to take you home.
No, Uncle, let me stay with you.
Stay with you, Uncle Moppet? When your husband's soon to be is here for to take you home?
Anne's in the right. As you wish it. I leave it to morning. Emily, good night, my dear.
Goodbye, Ham.
Oh, only good night, my dear.
Now, we're going upstairs, Emily, to tell your aunt there's Master Davy's here. And that'll cheer her up a bit.
Let me come with you.
Come with you, please. Oh, Master Davy, if her uncle were turned out of house and home, that's my belief she'd go along with him. But there'll be someone else soon. Someone else, Emily. I'll come you up, Master Davy.
Barkis, my dear. Here's my dear boy, Master Davy, what brought us together, that you sent messages by. Wouldn't you speak to Master Davy?
He's going out with the tide.
With the tide?
How? People can't die along the coast, except when the tide's pretty nigh out.
Do's all a cooking, do she?
You listen. He's come to himself.
I'll take it to Yarmouth for the couch.
He's going out fast.
Bartlett, my dear.
C.P. Barkis. No. No better woman anywhere.
Look, here's Master Davy.
Parkis is with him.
And it being low water, he went out with the tide. The funeral, 1 week after his death, was very quiet. When it was over, Peggotty went back to the barge with her brother. We were all to meet there that night, and the following day she was to come with me to London to see about the will. I walked back to the barge alone. The night fell wild with rain and storm, and the sea ran high. Ham and Emily had not yet come back, but Peggotty sat in her old place, looking, but for her black dress, as if she'd never left it.
You're the first, Master Davy. Sit you down, sir. You're welcome, kind and hearty.
Thank you. I'm sure of that. Well, Peggotty, dear, how are you?
I miss him, Master Davy. That's the truth.
Cheer up, Mrs. Gummidge. Cheer up, my pretty mother. Cheer up only a little bit and see if a good deal more don't come natural.
Oh, not to me, Dan. Nothing's natural to me but to be alone and alone.
No.
Things go too contrary with me. I'll better go and be a riddance.
Why don't I want you more now than I ever did?
Oh, how could I expect to be wanted being so lone and lorn and so contrary?
Why, Mother, how can you think?
Hush, darling. Leave her be.
Here, give me the candle, Clara.
Here it is.
Thank you. There we are, Mrs. Gummidge. Light it up according to custom. Now, you're wondering what's that for, sir. Well, that's for our little Emily. You see, the path ain't over light and cheerful after dark. When I'm here at the hour she's coming home, I put the light in the window. I know after she's married and gone, I shall still put the candle in the window and sit before the fire, pretending I'm expecting of her. Now, when I see it, I say to myself, she's a-looking at it. Emily's a-coming. Oh. Right for all that. Where is she? Where's Emily?
Master Davy.
Yes?
Will you come out a minute and see what Emily and me has got to show you?
Why, yes. What is it, Ham? Where's Emily?
Oh. Master Davy.
Ham! For heaven's sake, what's the matter?
My love, Master Davy, the pride and hope of my heart, her that I'd have died for, she's gone.
Gone?
Emily's run away. Oh, Master Davy, think how she's run away. I pray our good and gracious God to kill her that's so dear to me, sooner than let her come to ruin our disgrace.
Ma'am.
You're a scholar. You know what's right and best. What am I to say to him? How am I ever to break it to him?
Break what? What you got there?
It's the letter.
From Emily?
Yeah. Give it me. No. Mr. Peggotty.
Take it. Read it. Read it to me, slow. I don't know as I can understand.
When you, who love me so much better than I have ever deserved, even when my mind was innocent, see this.
I shall be far away. When I leave my home, my dear home, it will be never to come back. Unless he bring me back a lady. Pray heaven that I am going away from have compassion on my uncle. Tell him that I never loved him half so dear. Be his comfort. Love some good girl that will be what I once was to uncle and be true to you and worthy of you and know no shame but me. God bless all. If he don't bring me back a lady, and I don't pray for my own self, I'll pray for all. My parting love to Uncle.
My last tears. And my last thanks. For Uncle. That's all. Mr. Peggotty.
I thank you, sir. I thank you. Who's the man? I want to know his name. There's a man suspected. Who is it?
Master Davy,
go away a bit and let me tell him what I must. Now, you don't ought to hear it, sir.
I want to know his name.
There's been a servant about here at odd times. There's been a gentleman, too. Both of them belong to each other. The servant was seen along with a poor girl last night. He's been in hiding about here this week or more. No. Never stay, Master Davy. No, don't. A strange shay and horses was in Yarmouth this morning. Servant went to it. Emily was nigh him. T'other was inside. He's the man.
For the Lord's law, don't tell me his name is Steerforth.
His name is Steerforth. And he's a damn villain!
Give me my coat. Oh, bear a hand. I've struck all of a heap and I can't do it.
Bear
a hand and help me.
Oh, Dan-o, my poor Dan-o.
Where are you going?
I'm going to see my niece. I'm going to see my Emily. And I'm going first to stave in that there boat and sink it where I would have drowned at him, as I'm a living soul if I'd had one thought of what was in him.
Oh, God.
Strike me down dead, but I'd have drowned him and thought it right. I'm going to seek my niece.
Where?
Anywhere. I'm going to seek my niece through the wall. I'm going to find my poor Emily in her shame and bring her back.
No.
No one stop me.
No, Donald. Not as you are now. Take her in a little while, my lone Donald, but not as you are now. Sit you down and give me your forgiveness for having ever been a worry to you.
Oh, Mother, I can't.
What of my kindred has ever been to this? And let us speak a word about them times when she was first an orphan and Nam was too, and when I was a poor widow woman and you took me in. Eh? That'll soften your poor heart, Daniel, and you'll bear your sorrow better. But you know the promise. As you've done it on one of the least of these, you've done it unto me. Well, that can never fail under this roof. Been our shelter for so many, many years.
When I heard him crying, my overcharged heart found the same relief, and I cried too. And yet, deeply as I felt my own part in all this, distressed as I was at the discovery of his unworthiness, I had never loved Steerforth better than when the ties that bound me to him were thus broken. All was at an end between us. But if I had been brought face to face with him, I could not have uttered one reproach. Yes, Steerforth, my sorrow might bear witness against you at the judgment throne. My anger never will. The news spread quickly through the town, and for Mr. Peggotty and Ham, there was but one feeling: respect for their distress. It was on the beach, down close to the sea, that I found them.
We've had a mortar talk, sir, of what we ought to do, but we see our course now. I'm going to seek her. That's my duty evermore.
Where will you look?
I don't know yet, but if you're agreeable, I'll go along you to London tomorrow.
Certainly.
Ham will hold his present walk and go and live along with my sister. And the old boat...
Will you desert it?
No, sir. If ever she should come a-wandering back, I wouldn't have the old place seen to cast her off. But to look as it's always looked, to tempt her, to draw nigh, peep in, and then maybe, seeing none but Mrs. Gummidge there, she might take heart to creep in and rest her weary head. Every night, a candle must be stood there, and if ever she should see it, it may seem to say, come back, my child. Come back.
Next morning, we set out for London, and Ham came to the coach station to take leave of us. Before I took my place beside Mr. Peggotty, Ham drew me aside.
Master Davy, his life is quite broke up. He don't know what's afore him. He found upon a void that'll last the rest of his days. Unless he find what he's seeking. I'm sure he'll be a fan to him.
Trust me. I will indeed.
Well, thank you, very kind. One thing more. I'm in the good employ now, and I hadn't no way of spending what I get. Money's no use to me no more. Except to live. If you can lay it out for him, I should do my work with a better heart.
I'll do what you wish, Ham, but it may be that in time, your own life will be less lonely.
No, no, sir. All that's past and over. No one can never fill the place what's empty.
Our journey was not a happy one. How could it be? Mr. Peggotty sat silent, and I could not speak either. I had too many memories.
I'd like to be a lady. Oh, yes. I'd like it very much. We'd all be gentlefolk together then. May and Uncle and Ham and Mrs. Gummidge.
You haven't got a sister, have you, Copperfield? If you had, I should think she'd have been a pretty, timid, little bright-eyed sort of girl. I should have liked to know her.
Your friend, is he very handsome?
Look at Emily. She's like me. She'd like to see him.
Daisy, if anything should ever separate us, you must think of me at my best.
When I leave my home, my dear home, it will be never to come back unless he bring me back a lady. Never to come back.
Never to come back.
Never to come back.
Never to come back.
Mr. Peggotty's first purpose in coming to London was to see Mrs. Steerforth. When she received us, I saw in her face that she already knew. Rosa Dartle stood behind her chair.
Sit down, Mr. Peggotty.
No, ma'am. I shouldn't feel it natural to sit down in this here house. I'd sooner stand.
I know with deep regret what has brought you here. What do you want of me?
Please to read that, ma'am. That's my niece's hand.
Well?
Unless he bring me back a lady. That's what she said. I come to know, ma'am, whether he will keep his word.
No.
Why not?
It is impossible. He would disgrace himself. You can't fail to know that she's far below him.
Then raise her up.
She is uneducated and ignorant.
I think not, ma'am. But I'm no judge of them things. You can teach her better.
Her humble connections would make such a thing impossible, if nothing else.
Now, hark to this, ma'am. If she were 100 times my child, I couldn't love her more. You don't know what that is to lose your child. I do. All the riches in the world, if they was mine, would be nought to me to buy her back. But save her from this disgrace, and she'll never be disgraced by us. We be content to let her be. We'll be content to think of her far off, as if she were under another sun and sky. We'll be content to trust her to our husband, and to our little children, perhaps, and bide the time when all of us shall be alike in quality afore our God.
Such a marriage would blight my son's career. It can never take place, and it never will. If there is any other compensation...
I am looking at the likeness of the face that has looked at me in my home, at my fireside, smiling and friendly when it was so treacherous that I go half wild when I think of it. If the likeness of that face don't turn to burning fire at the thought of offering money to me for my child's ruin, that's as bad. I don't know being a lady's but what it's worse.
What compensation can you make to me for opening such a pit between me and my son? What is your love to mine? What is your separation to ours?
Calm yourself.
No, Rosa, let him listen. My son, who has been the object of my life, to take up in a moment with a miserable girl and quit me for her, to set this wretched fancy against his mother's claims on his duty, love, respect... gratitude? Is this no injury?
Please do not.
Not a word, Rosa. Let James go where he will with the means my love has secured to him. If he thinks to reduce me by long absence, he does not know his mother. Let him put away his whim now, and he is welcome back. Let him not put her away now, and he shall never come near me, living or dying, unless, being rid of her forever, he comes humbly to me and begs for my forgiveness. This is my right. This is the separation that there is between us. And is this no injury? Mr. Copperfield, let us end this interview. There is no more to say.
And I have no more to say, ma'am. I come here with no hope, and I take away no hope. I've done what I thought should be done. But I never look for any good to come of my standing where I do. This has been too evil a house for me and mine for me to expect it. Master Davy?
Yes. Goodbye, Mrs. Steerforth.
Mr. Copperfield.
I'll wait for you outside, sir.
You do well to bring that fellow here.
Miss Dartle, he is a deeply injured man. You may not know...
I know that James Steerforth has a false, corrupt heart and is a traitor. But what do I know or care about this fellow and his common niece?
You deepen the injury and you do him a great wrong.
I do him no wrong. They're a depraved, worthless set. I would have her whipped.
For shame, Miss Dartle!
I would have his house pulled down. I'd have her branded on the face, dressed in rags, and cast out on the streets to starve. If I had the power to sit in judgment on her, I'd see it done. See it done, I would do it. I detest her. If I could hunt her to her grave, I would. If there were any word of comfort that would be a solace to her in her dying hour, and only I possessed it, I wouldn't part with it for life itself.
I have seen passion in many forms, but never in such a form as that. Mr. Peggotty set off on his travels that very night. I stood with his sister and watched him till he turned the corner of the street, and we lost him.
I'm going to seek her, far and wide. If any hurt should come to me, remember the last words I left for her were, my unchanged love is with my darling child, and I forgive her.
And now I had to turn my mind to Peggotty's affairs. I took them into my own hands with no little pride. I proved the will and got everything in order. When all was settled, I took her to the office to pay her bill. Mr. Spenlow had gone out to get a gentleman sworn for a marriage license, but was expected back soon. We had only a few minutes to wait, but when he returned, neither Peggotty nor I had eyes for him. For the gentleman who was to be married was an old acquaintance.
Copperfield, you know Mr. Murdstone, I believe?
I do.
Mr. Spenlow?
One moment. Excuse me, sir.
Certainly. Copperfield, I hope you're doing well. It can hardly be interesting to you, but... Yes, if you wish to know.
And you, Mrs. Marcus?
Yes.
I'm sorry to hear that you have lost your husband.
That's not the first loss I've had in my life, Mr. Murdstone. I'm glad that there's nobody to blame for this one. Nobody to answer for it.
That's a comfortable reflection. You have done your duty.
I'm thankful to think I haven't worn anybody's life away. No, Mr. Murdstone. I've not worried and frightened any sweet creature to an early grave.
Copperfield.
Yes?
We're not likely to meet again soon. A source of satisfaction to us both, no doubt. You always rebelled against my just authority, exerted for your good, so I don't expect that you should owe me any goodwill now. There's an antipathy between us.
An old one?
Yes. It rankled in your childish heart. It embittered the life of your poor mother. I hope you may do better yet. I hope you may correct yourself.
Ah,
Mr. Spenlow.
Sir.
A gentleman of your profession are accustomed to family differences and know how difficult they always are. That is the correct sum, I believe.
Quite correct, sir, thank you. Your license?
Thank you. Good day to you. Good day, Mr. Copperfield.
Yes, I believe this is to be rather a good marriage.
Do you mean there is money in it, sir?
Yes, I understand there's money. Beauty, too, I'm told.
Indeed. Is his new wife young?
Just of age. So lately that I should think they'd been waiting for that.
May the Lord deliver.
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Spenlow, sir. Mrs. Barkis's account.
Ah, thank you. Yes, that's right. Quite right. Here you are, Copperfield. I should have been extremely happy to have limited these charges to the actual expenditure out of pocket, but it's an irksome incident in my professional life that I am not at liberty to consult my own wishes. I have a partner,
Mr. Jorkins.
Mr. Jorkins, yes, quite so. One thing more.
Yes, Mr. Spenlow?
It is my daughter Dora's birthday in 1 week's time.
Yes?
We are having a picnic to celebrate the occasion. Would you care to join us?
Would I care to... Yes, Mr. Spenlow. Thank you. I would indeed.
I passed the intervening period in a state of dotage, heightened by the receipt next day of a little lace-edged sheet of notepaper, favoured by Papa to remind. I turn hot when I remember the cravat I bought. My boots might be placed in any collection of instruments of torture. I hired a gallant grey horse for the occasion. I sent down, the day before, a delicate little hamper, almost a declaration in itself, and I arrived in Mr. Spenlow's garden, carrying a bouquet specially purchased that morning at Covent Garden. It was a beautiful day, and the most beautiful thing in it was Dora, sitting on a garden seat among the butterflies, in a white bonnet and a dress of celestial blue.
Good morning, Mr. Copperfield.
Miss Spenlow, allow me to give you... Oh, they match your dress. And your eyes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Copperfield. What do your flowers? Smell them, Jip. Oh, look at this dog. Look to bite my poor, beautiful flowers. Mr. Copperfield, this is my friend, Miss Mills. Cross Miss Murdstone isn't here. She's gone to her brother's wedding and she'll be away 3 weeks. Isn't that delightful?
Yes.
You can't believe how disagreeable she is, Julia.
Oh, yes, I can, my dear. Life has not always been kind, remember?
Yes, Julia, forgive me.
I learned afterwards that Miss Mills had lately been disappointed in love and was consequently regarded with compassionate respect as a blighted flower. I don't know to this hour where we all went. Perhaps some Arabian Nights magician opened the place for us, and shut it up forever when we came away. It was a green spot on a hill, shady trees and heather. There were, unfortunately, many other people there.
We need a wine cellar. Oh, and there's a capital cellar here, and that hollow tree trunk. Pass me the bottle.
One of them I hated, a red-whiskered impostor, 3 or 4 years older than me.
I've done this sort of thing before, you know. And, by the way, I make a capital salad.
Do you really, Mr. Robin?
Indeed I do, Miss Spenlow. But you ladies must help me. I demand that you slice the cucumbers with your own fair hands.
He was an ingenious beast. He made his salad. Nothing would have induced me to touch it. And then he had the impertinence to eat his dinner at Dora's feet.
My dear Miss Spenlow, I drink your health.
I attached myself in my misery to a young creature in pink with little eyes and flirted with her desperately.
Oh, Mr. Copperfield, I don't believe a word you say.
I assure you, I am sincerity itself.
Clarissa, come here.
Yes, Mama.
So now I was alone and more miserable than ever. I wandered off into the woods, and I was contemplating flight on my gallant grey when Dora and Miss Mills met me.
Mr. Copperfield.
Yes?
You are dull.
Not at all.
And Dora.
Yes?
You are dull.
No, Julia, not in the least.
Oh, come. Enough of this. Do not allow a trivial misunderstanding to wither the blossoms of spring.
Dora, where are you?
Coming, Papa.
Forgive me, Mr. Copperfield. I will come back. Mr. Copperfield?
Yes?
Dora is coming to stay with me the day after tomorrow. If you would care to call, I'm sure my papa will be most happy to meet you.
Why, thank you. Dora did come back, and I went straight up to seventh heaven. We strayed among the trees, with Dora's shy arm through mine. And when she sang, it seemed that she was singing only to me. Two days passed, very slowly, and I called upon Miss Mills. I was resolute to declare my passion, if opportunity offered.
Mr. Copperfield, I'm very glad to see you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Copperfield.
Good afternoon, Miss Mills. Miss Spenlow.
I'm afraid Papa is out, but would you care to take tea with us?
Thank you, Miss Mills. How kind of you.
I will arrange it.
I hope your poor horse wasn't tired when he got home. It was such a long way for him.
It was a long way for him, for he had nothing to uphold him on the journey.
Wasn't he fed, poor thing?
I mean, he hadn't the unutterable happiness I had.
What was that?
The happiness of being near you.
Oh? You didn't seem very sensible of it when you were sitting by Miss Kit.
Miss Kit?
The young lady in pink. But why shouldn't you sit by Miss Kit if you want to? You're at liberty to do whatever you like.
No. No, I'll never be at liberty again. Miss Spenlow. Dora. I love you so much.
Mr. Copperfield.
I'd die without you. I'd die for you if you wanted me to. I've loved you from the first moment I saw you. I love you to distraction. No one has ever loved as much as I love you. Oh, Miss Spenlow. Dora. Dearest Dora, have I any hope? I shall die if you say no.
Yes.
I cannot live without you. I... What did you say?
I said yes.
Oh, my dearest, dearest girl.
Mr. Copperfield.
Yes?
Dora?
Yes?
Well...
Yes!
God bless you. God bless you both. Oh, forgive me. This reawakens painful memories. Dora, Mr. Copperfield, a happier future awaits you.
But we can't get married without Papa's consent.
Oh. Of course not, my darling. Shall I go and see him?
No, not yet. He might not quite like it. He'll say we're both too young or some such tiresome thing.
Oh, yes. Perhaps he may.
We must keep our engagement secret for a little while.
A secret engagement? Oh, youth. Youth.
I walked on air. We held secret meetings. I measured Dora's finger for a ring, a pretty little toy made of forget-me-nots. And we arranged a plan of correspondence through Miss Mills to comprehend at least one letter on each side every day. What an idle time. What an insubstantial, happy, foolish time. There is no other that, in retrospect, I can smile at half so much and think of half so tenderly.
My dear Traddles, come in. I'm delighted to see you at last. I heard you'd called, but I've been so much engaged.
Yes, I know.
What did you say?
Yours lives in London, I think. Miss D, you know? She lives in London, I believe.
Yes, near London.
Mine, perhaps you recollect, lives in Devonshire, one of ten. Consequently, I'm not so much engaged as you, in that sense.
I wonder that you can bear to see her so seldom.
Yes, yes, it does seem a wonder. I suppose it's because there's no help for it.
I suppose so. And because you're so constant and patient.
Do I strike you that way?
Yes.
Oh, really? I didn't know I was. But she's such a dear girl herself. She may have made me more like her. She's always forgetting herself and taking care of the other nine.
Is she the eldest?
Oh, dear, no, no, no. The eldest is a beauty. Not but that my Sophie is beautiful in my eyes and would be one of the dearest girls in the world in anybody's eyes. But when I say the eldest is a beauty, I mean she really is... Oh, splendid, you know.
Indeed.
Mm. So, being formed for society and admiration and not being able to enjoy much of it because of their limited means, well, she naturally gets a little irritable and exacting sometimes. But Sophie puts her in a good humour.
Is Sophie the youngest?
Oh, dear, no. The two youngest are only 9 and 10. Sophie educates them.
Is the mother alive?
Oh, yes, she's alive. She's a very superior woman, but the damp country doesn't suit her. She's lost the use of her limbs. It's very sad. But domestically, it's not so bad as it might be, because Sophie takes her place.
I think I admire your Sophie very much.
Oh, I told you. She's the dearest girl.
And how are your prospects now?
Not very different, I'm afraid.
And how is Mr. Micawber?
Mr. Micawber? Oh, he's quite well, thank you. But I'm not living with him at present.
No?
No. He's changed his name to Mortimer in consequence of his temporary embarrassments. And he don't come out till after dark, and then in spectacles. There was an execution put into our house for rent. Mrs. Micawber was in such a dreadful state that I couldn't resist giving my name to another bill.
Oh, Traddles.
Well, it made me so happy to see the matter settled with it, Copperfield. But unfortunately, within a week, another execution came in and broke up the establishment. I've been living in a furnished apartment since, and the, Mortimers have been very private indeed.
When Peggotty came back with me to my chambers, we were both very surprised to see that the outer door was open, and more surprised still to find Mrs. Crupp making tea for my aunt and Mr. Dick, who was surrounded by a quantity of luggage.
My dear aunt! What an unexpected pleasure.
I knew it, Mr. Copperfield would have his heart in his mouth when he saw his dear relations.
You remember my aunt, Peggotty?
Indeed I don't.
For the love of goodness, child, don't call the woman by that South Sea Island name. If she married and got rid of it, which was the best thing she could do, why don't you give her the benefit of the change? What's your name now, P?
Barclays, ma'am.
Well, that's human. Sounds less as if you wanted a missionary. How do you do, Barclays? I hope you're well.
Yes, thank you, ma'am.
We're older than we were, I see. We have only met once before, you know. A nice business we made of it then.
Let me get you a chair, Aunt. You must be uncomfortable sitting on that box.
Thank you, Trot. I prefer to sit on my own property. We needn't trouble you to wait, Mrs. Crupp.
Oh, shall I put a little more tea in a pot before I go, Mom?
No, thank you.
Would you let me fetch another pot, butter, Mom?
No.
Or would you be persuaded to try a new lady?
Nothing, thank you.
Ain't there nothing I could do for your dear aunt, Mr. Copperfield?
I said nothing.
Very well, Mom. Oh, pleasure to see you, Mom.
Dick.
Yes, Miss Trotwood.
You know what I told you about time servers and wealth worshippers? Mrs. Crupp is one of them. Barclays, I'll trouble you to look after the tea. I don't fancy that woman's pouring out.
Yes, ma'am. That'll be a pleasure.
Thank you. Now, Trot.
Yes, Aunt?
Are you firm and self-reliant now?
I hope so.
Then why do you suppose I prefer to sit on this property of mine tonight?
I don't know.
Because it's all I have. I'm ruined, my dear.
What?
Dick knows it.
Oh, yes. Ruined.
All I have in the world is in this room. And I've left Janet to let the cottage. Marcus, I want a bed for this gentleman tonight.
Very well, ma'am.
To save expense, perhaps you could make up something here for me. Anything will do. We'll talk about this more tomorrow. Oh, Trot. My dear Trot.
Betsy.
I only grieve for you. But we must live misfortune down.
Did you say he's to stay at the Chandler's place, Mr. Copperfull?
Yes, Mrs. Crump. I'm sure there's a bed there that will suit this gentleman. Hey, Mr. Dick?
Oh, yes, there ain't room to swing a cat there. No, there ain't.
But I don't want to swing a cat, Trotwood. I never do swing a cat. So what does that matter?
Not at all, I'm sure. But, Mr. Dick, before my aunt comes back, tell me, what has happened?
Well, Trotwood, 2 days ago your aunt asked me if I were the philosopher she took me for, and I said, I hoped so. So she told me she was ruined.
What did you say?
I said, indeed. And she was pleased with me. So then we came to London and had porter and sandwiches on the road.
Do you know what ruin means, Mr. Dick?
Why, yes. It means ruin, don't it?
It means distress, want, and starvation.
But I thought, your aunt is such a wonderful woman, and you're a scholar. I thought distress and starvation. Oh dear. What can we do? Oh, there's the memorial.
Of course, Harris. But all we can do just now is look cheerful and not let my aunt know we're thinking about it.
My aunt's composure was a lesson to us all. She was to have my bed, and a bed was made up for me in the sitting room. I started to make up her usual nightcap for her, but she stopped me.
No, Trot, my dear. Not wine.
But you always have wine.
Not wine now. Ale. Half a pint.
But there's wine here.
Keep it in case of sickness. We must use it carefully.
Oh,
child, if nothing worse than ale happens to us, we're well off. Trot, I don't care for strange faces in general, but I rather like that Barkis of yours. She's uncommonly fond of you.
There's nothing she wouldn't do to prove it.
I believe you. The poor fool's been begging to hand over some of her money because she's got too much of it. She's the most ridiculous creature that ever was born. But there are good points in Barkis. We had quite a gossip while you took Mr. Dick to his lodgings.
Did you?
Yes. I know all about it, you know.
About
her niece. Oh, I don't know where these wretched girls expect to go.
Oh, poor Emily.
Don't talk to me about poor. She should have thought of that before she caused so much misery. But enough of that. Barkis tells me you fancy yourself in love.
Fancy? I adore her with my whole soul.
The little thing is very fascinating, no doubt.
No one can have the least idea what she is.
And not silly?
Silly?
Not light-headed?
Light-headed?
Now, I only ask, mind, I don't depreciate her. Poor little couple. So you think you were made for each other and are to go through a party supper table kind of life like two pretty pieces of confectionery?
We're young and inexperienced, I know.
Yes, Trot.
And I dare say we say and think a good deal that's rather foolish, mm-hmm. But we love each other truly. If I thought Dora could ever love anyone else or cease to love me, or that I could love anyone else or cease to love her, I think I'd go out of my mind.
Ah, Trot. Blind, blind, blind. But I don't want to make two young creatures unhappy. So, though it's a girl and boy attachment, and they often... I don't say always come to nothing. Still, we'll be serious about it and hope for a prosperous issue one of these days. Hmm? There's time enough for it to come to anything.
How are you, Copperfield? Fine day.
A beautiful morning, sir. Could I say a word to you before you go into court?
By all means.
I'm sorry to say I've had bad news from my aunt.
Tell me. Not paralysis, I hope.
No. It's not a health, sir. She's met with some large losses. In fact, she has very little left.
You astound me.
Indeed, sir. Her affairs are so changed. I wanted to ask you whether it would be possible, at a sacrifice on our part of some portion of the premium, of course, to cancel my articles.
Cancel your articles?
You see, though I've no fear of the future, as things are now, I don't know what means I shall have unless I earn them for myself.
I'm extremely sorry to hear this. It isn't usual to cancel articles for any such reason. It is not professional. It is not a convenient precedent. Far from it. At the same time...
Oh, you're very good, sir.
Not at all. Don't thank me. I was going to say that at the same time, if I had not a partner...
Oh, do you think if I were to mention it to Mr. Jorkins, would you object?
By no means. If you think it worthwhile.
You have mentioned this to Mr. Spenlow?
Yes, sir.
And he said I should object?
He considered it probable.
Well, I'm sorry to say I can't agree. Forgive me, I have an appointment at the bank.
Then there's no way of arranging the matter?
No, I object, you know. If Mr. Spenlow objects...
Personally, he doesn't object.
Oh, personally. I assure you there is an objection. I really have got an appointment at the bank.
I left in a state of despondency and was walking home when a hackney carriage stopped beside me. The passenger looked out and I saw the face I'd never seen without a renewed feeling of security and happiness.
Agnes! Of all the people in the world, what a pleasure to see you. If I were a magician, there's no one else I could have wished for.
Oh, indeed. I did get your letter, you know.
Oh, well, perhaps Dora first.
Certainly Dora first, I hope.
Dora first, but you next. Where are you going?
To see your aunt in your chambers. Are you going home?
Yes.
Then you'd better get in. Drive on, please.
Has my aunt told you what's happened?
She wrote me a note to tell me of the change in her fortunes. Papa is in London with Uriah Heep, so I came up with them.
So they're partners now. Found him.
Yes. They have business here, and I don't like to let Papa go anywhere alone with Uriah.
Has he the same influence on your father?
Yes. There is such a change at home, you'd scarcely know the dear old house. They live with us now.
They?
Mr. Heep and his mother. He sleeps in your old room.
I wish I had the ordering of his dreams. He wouldn't sleep there long.
I keep my own little room. You remember? The little paneled room.
Where I first saw you.
It's just the same. We were very happy, weren't we?
We were indeed.
The chief evil of their presence in the house is that I can't be as near Papa as I could wish. I can't watch over him as closely as I'd like. Trotwood?
Yes?
Did your aunt tell you how her money was lost?
No, she hasn't told me.
I see.
You tried to cancel your articles? You shouldn't have done that, Trot. Oh, but you're a generous boy, and I'm proud of you. Now, both of you, let us look the case of Betsy Trotwood in the face and see how it stands. Agnes, sit down, my dear. Well, Betsy Trotwood had a certain property, enough to live on. More, for she'd saved a little. On the advice of her man of business, she laid it out on landed security. That did very well and returned very good interest, till Betsy was paid off and she had to look about her for a new investment.
Yes.
She thought she was wiser than her man of business, who wasn't such a good man of business as he used to be. I mean, your father, Agnes.
I see.
So she took it into her head to lay it out for herself. She took her pigs to a foreign market, and a very bad market it turned out to be. The bank was at the other end of the world and tumbled into space, for all I know.
My dear Miss Trotwood.
Anyhow, it fell to pieces and never will and never can pay sixpence. And Betsy's sixpences were all there, and there's an end of this. Least said, soonest mended.
Is that the end of the story?
I hope it's enough, child. Except, and she lived happily ever afterwards. Perhaps I may add that one day. But how can Trot and I do best on our means? What do you say, Agnes?
I've been thinking, Trotwood, that if you had time to spare...
Well, yes. I'm always disengaged after 4 or 5 o'clock, and I have time early in the morning.
Dr. Strong has retired and come to live in London, and he asked Papa to recommend him a secretary. Well, don't you think he'd rather have his favourite old pupil than anyone else? And I'm sure he'd be generous.
Dear Agnes, you're always my good angel. I shall write to him at once.
I think that's Papa. He promised me he'd come.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickfield. And Uriah.
Master Copperfield.
Come in. Well, Wickfield, I've been telling your daughter how well I've disposed of my money for myself. We've been getting on very well. Agnes is worth the whole firm, in my opinion.
Indeed. If I may humbly make the remark, I fully agree. I should be only too happy if Miss Agnes was a partner.
You're a partner yourself, and that's enough for you, I expect. How do you find yourself, sir?
Pretty well, thank you, ma'am. I hope you're the same, and master, I should say, Mr. Copperfield, I hope I see you well. I am rejoiced to see you, even under present circumstances. Present circumstances is not what your friends would wish for you, but it isn't money makes the man. And how do you think we are looking, Mr. Copperfield? Don't you find Mr. Wickfield blooming? Years don't tell much in our firm, Mr. Copperfield, except in raising up the humble, namely mother and self, and developing the beautiful, namely Miss Agnes.
Deuce take her, man. What's he about? If you're an eel, sir, conduct yourself like one. If you're a man, control your limbs. Good God! I'm not going to be serpentined and corkscrewed out of my senses.
I am well aware, Master Copperfield, that Miss Trotwood, though an excellent lady, has a quick temper, and it's only natural it should be made quicker by present circumstances.
Yes.
I only call to say that if there was anything we could do in present circumstances, Mother and self, or Wickfield and he... we should be really glad. I may go so far, Mr. Wickfield?
Uriah Heep is active in the business.
Oh?
What he says, I quite concur in.
Oh, what a reward it is to be so trusted in. But I hope I am able to do something to relieve him from the fatigues of business, Master Copperfield.
Uriah Heep is a great relief to me. It is a load off my mind to have him as a partner.
Well... I am bespoke myself this evening, otherwise I should have been happy to have kept with my friend. But I leave my partner to represent the firm. Miss Agnes, ever yours. I wish you good day, Master Copperfield, and leave my humble respects for Miss Betsy Trotwood.
On this, he retired, kissing his great hand and leering at us like a mask. Mr. Wickfield, left alone, became more like his old self, though there was a settled depression on him which he never shook off. He invited me to dine with them at their lodgings. After dinner, Agnes sat beside her father, as of old, and poured out his wine. He took what she gave and no more, like a child.
Papa?
Oh, thank you, Agnes. Thank you, my child.
You look tired. You should rest a little now. Come.
Perhaps I should. Thank you, my dear. Will you play for us?
If Trotwood doesn't mind.
I should like it above all things.
He lay down on a sofa. It was almost dark, but not too dark to see tears glittering in his daughter's eyes. I pray heaven that I never will forget her in her love and truth at that time. Oh, Agnes. sister of my boyhood. If only I had known then what I knew long after. When I left to walk home, there was a beggar in the street. He made me start by muttering, as if he were an echo of my aunt's words.
Blind! Blind! Blind!
That was part 6 of David Copperfield from the novel by Charles Dickens. It starred Gary Cady, Miriam Margolyes, David Bamber, Maggie McCarthy, David Burke, Timothy Spall, Joanna Myers, and Mary Wimbush, with Phil Daniels, Maria Miles, John Moffat, Nicholas Gatt, Andrew Wincott, Irene Sutcliffe, Jenny Howe, Jane Whittenshaw, and Timothy Bateson. Also Mark Straker, Terence Edmund, Peter Tubnham, Peter Penry Jones, Ronald Herdman, Una Beeson, Pauline Letts, Timothy Carlton, David Bannerman, Cyril Jenkins, and Anne Windsor. The book was dramatised by Betty Davis, and the producer was Marilyn Imrie.